I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Herzlich willkommen zum Larger Living Podcast, dein Podcast zum original intuitiven Essen nach Rash und Triboli, Health at Every Size, Body Image, Feminismus und einer Prise Ethnologie. Ich bin Dot und ich bin deine Wegweiserin raus aus dem Diätendschungel hin zu mehr Selbstakzeptanz, mehr Selbstvertrauen, gesunder Selbstfürsorge und Frieden mit dem Essen und deinem Körper. Lehn dich zurück, mach's dir gemütlich, schnapp dir ein Heißgetränk deiner Wahl. Wir legen los. Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome to the Larger Living Podcast in English again. This time I have a very special guest and I have a coaching buddy, so to speak. We call ourselves Animites or Animates, people who graduated from Anima's coaching school in the UK, so you will hear her sporting her lovely British accent that I enjoy very much. Her name's Gina, and it's so fitting that we've reached the month of April now with the podcast interviews, because April is PMDD Awareness Month. So what better time of the year to talk about PMDD? Now you might ask, Dot, what the hell are you talking about? What is PMDD? So, in short, to quote Gina in this interview, PMDD is an absolute shit show. Her words, not mine. And it's like PMS on steroids. And it's absolute horrible. So we are going to talk about what makes it so horrible. And this is why this podcast episode comes with a content warning. So we're not going to go into details or anything like that. But of course, we're going to talk about what makes PMDD so horrible for people suffering from this. But, you know, the beauty of the community that goes with it, of the PMDD warriors, and how Gina helps people with it, including herself, and the beauty of cyclic living. So we're going to touch on some dark subjects, and I just wanted to make sure that you're safe. And this is why this podcast episode only has a content warning, because we are not going to go deep in it, but we're going to mention it. So take care of yourself. Stay safe out there. Oh my gosh. Another thing that I wanted to underline is that even though Gina is an absolute expert for PMDD, she, just as much as I am, is a transformational life coach who trained with Animas. So she's qualified to help you with all aspects of your life, not just that special time of the month, if you get my gist. We laughed so hard in this podcast episode. So you will hear a lot of laughing. You will hear a lot of bantering back and forth. We had an excellent time. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Hello and welcome, Gina, to the Larger Living Podcast. I'm so happy that we get to make this to talk about. We have time to talk about this today. Yeah, I had some technical difficulties, so we started a little bit later. I hope that we can still have time to talk about everything. How do I know you? For the listeners and the viewers, you and I, we both went to the same coaching school. And we both were in the same cohort, obviously, and this is how I know you. So Animas is a UK school, as you will hear as soon as Gina speaks with her lovely UK accent. And this is why the interview is in English. Gina caught my interest, apart from her being a lovely coach and having a warm and lovely, lovely presence that I got to witness in the trainings. And that alone would qualify her to be on this podcast. But she has way more to offer than this. She is, She is an expert on PMDD. And that stands for, if I say it correctly, Gina, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And before I checked out Gina's Instagram, Gina Friel, by the way, Gina Friel Coaching, I think.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, great. Oh my God, I did my research right. So her Insta, Gina Friel Coaching. And as soon as I checked that out, just, you know, oh, hey, say hello to my colleague, say hello to my cohort buddy. I haven't come across that term, and I was intrigued, and I read about it, and I was just like, well, we all know PMS, right? We all know premenstrual syndrome, like, you know, moodiness, mood swings, craving for like food cravings, irritability, all of that thing. But what the heck is PMDD, and how, like I haven't heard about, like, what is that and how is that different? I read a little bit about it, and let's just say that I was like, really, I had a mind-blowing moment, Gina, and I really want to thank you for this, to open my mind to this, to open my horizon to this, and to really like boom, I never thought of it that way. And I appreciate this, and this is why I invited you today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dot. I really, really appreciate that. And I think and I want to thank you for your openness to learning about it, because, you know, it is something that people don't know about. And until two or three years ago, I'm not great with dates, but I hadn't heard of it until so I was really unwell. Essentially got referred. I was working for a community mental health team, and it was a mental health nurse there who said, "This sounds like PMDD." And I was like, "PMD what? PMD what?" And it was, I mean, mind-blowing in a different way for me, because this is something that I feel I've experienced for most of my life. And to have suddenly something that explains everything that's been going on and explains kind of, I'm going to say why it's happening, but it gives you some understanding of it, and it makes you feel like you're less alone. That was mind blowing. That was mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Like, you're not the first one to mention that. And I just throw in this one word because it has been chasing me ever since the beginning of 2021. Community. Belonging. And this is so important, especially now in these troubling times with COVID and, you know, what happened in the US. This we record this in January. I mean, community and belonging are more important than ever. And no matter what any kind of medical condition is, no matter what your political views are, no matter what, like, any psychological issues you have, like, everyone, and I really mean it, needs to belong. It's a basic human need. Everyone needs community. So yeah, I really feel that.
It's so, so important. And I think you're right. It's a very basic human need, like that desire to belong and to connect. And actually, over the last year, specifically, the way that I've connected with the PMDD community has just been life-changing. It's such an incredible, incredible community of people who, you know, all experience this awful, because it is awful. You know, I often say, like, PMDD is just an absolute shit show, and it is. It is. But the community and the compassion that you find there is just magic. And I love being a part of it. I love being able to support it, you know, and I love also advocating for it. So something that I've done a lot is I speak about PMDD so much because it needs to be spoken about. Like you said, Doc, you hadn't heard of it until you came across my Instagram. And I mean, would it be useful for me to say, you know, what PMDD is, so how it impacts someone?
Please, yeah. Please, like, what the hell is it?
So PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder, is essentially, it's a hormone-based mood disorder. And all that means on a very basic level is that, you know, a person's very natural hormone shifts throughout their menstrual cycle really massively impact someone with PMDD. So I guess someone who doesn't have it, who experiences, you know, in inverted commas, a normal, what is normal, a normal menstrual cycle, won't react to them to that extent. You know, there might be that irritability, but someone with PMDD has this like seismic shift almost. So after ovulation, there will be a shift. And for me, I ovulate and then it's about 2 weeks until I'm due. And so I have 2 weeks where my symptoms come out to play and go wild. The first week, manageable. So I still work for that week. The second week, I don't take client calls. So the clients that I work with, so on one of my packages, you kind of get, it's like all in, all access. You can contact me anytime. But they're aware that they can contact me, but I respond on my time, you know, based on where I'm at, and there's an understanding there. So I make that work for the work that I do. But during that time, you know, all full body aches, extreme tiredness, exhaustion even, psychologically, a bit of like a warning here is I become a risk to myself. You know, there's a lot of people experience suicidal ideation with PMDD. And in fact, 30% of people with PMDD will attempt suicide. So,
wow, that's a really high number.
It's a really high number. It's so serious. And there are loads of other symptoms. So, and I'm talking about, you know, from my experience here, we all experience things differently, even if we have the same disorder. So paranoia, hopelessness, like deep depression, just to name a few of the really debilitating symptoms that play a part of it. But the great thing is that we can come out here and talk about it and raise awareness.
Yes. Absolutely, because it is serious.
Mm.
And like you said, it is an absolute shit show.
It is.
I can't. It's a great way of phrasing it because it is just so apt. I mean, come on. It is a shit show. And I think we both can agree that no one should be feeling this way. Like, no one should be left feeling this way either.
Mm.
So to kind of segue to this is, well, if for the listeners out there, so what if you experience all those symptoms and you suspect that you have PMDD? What can you do to treat this, or what can you do in order to make your life mm-hmm. manageable as much as you possibly can?
Oh, so that's a huge question, Dot.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Just almost like a pre-warning because information overload.
Try me.
So the first thing to say is that with PMDD, if you feel that, you know, there's a possibility that you are dealing with that, then if you can go to your doctor and have a conversation there, that's your first step. Just to be, you know, because medical professionals are the people that we need to seek some guidance from. In terms of treatment, though, the options vary. So there's a treatment pathway, and almost towards the top of it are things such as, so SSRIs, so, you know, an area of antidepressants, the oral contraceptive, the coil is the, I don't know if you call it something different. That's the Marina coil. We can maybe.
Oh, are these also contraceptives that get inserted into the uterus?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's IUD, intrauterine device.
Yes. Thank you for that.
I just talked about it yesterday, so this is how I know.
You know, just a word doesn't come to you, but because that's, we just call it the coil here, like in the UK.
We call it the coil too in German, by the way. We call it die Spirale. Oh, okay. So I was presuming that you meant that, but I was just like, huh, maybe it's like a new therapy. Maybe you put people in a giant coil. I don't know.
It's always good to clarify, isn't it? Got to be clear here.
Of course. So we mean intrauterine devices for specifically contraceptive purposes and giving out hormones. And is the copper coil, if we're going to call it that, is that also a treatment for PMDD?
I'm not sure that it is, because is it? I don't know is the straight answer. So that would be something that I'd need to check. So I've never actually had the coil because me neither. I've tried so many oral contraceptives. They do not agree with me. They do not agree with me at all. But to pull myself back to treatment options. So I've mentioned SSRIs, oral contraceptives, IUD. Therapy is an option. So CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and a sort of like subsection of that is DBT. So I think that stands for dialectical.
I'm very familiar with DBT, very familiar, because I got treated with it. I went through the DBT treatment once for 6 weeks in a specialized 6 week DBT in-person mm-hmm. treatment. And it's phenomenal. I love it. And I, well, in big brackets, prescribe it to my clients, to anyone more or less. So I do skill training with people who suffer from anxiety in general. They don't need to suffer from PMDD in order to use skills. No one needs to have, you know, borderline personality disorder, which it has been developed for initially in the 80s mm-hmm. to use skills. So should I talk about it? Do you want to talk about it quickly? Like, how should we talk about DBT?
I'm happy for you to talk about it a little bit, and then I can just add any thoughts, because it's something that I've also, it's a therapy that I've experienced as well. Well, so hop in.
I love it. So the way they explained it to me in the in-person treatment, and also the way that I explain it to the world, is that I kind of imagine, mm-hmm. dear listener, an exponential curve, which is very easy now that we all have lived through a pandemic. So we all know what an exponential curve looks like. It's like this, you know, this swish upwards. And on the vertical one is level of stress in percentage. And on the horizontal one is time. So, you know, it goes straight upward. And when you are, and we all experience this, so we all experience stress, we all need to cope with stress in a way. So when we are in the low percentages until, you know, 30% stress, the coping skills that we can use are very mild and are also very cognitive. Like, we can do yoga, we can stretch a little, we can go for a stroll, we can read a book, we can watch some Netflix and chill, and, you know, we can check out, I don't know, a blog that we like or a podcast. Hint, hint. So, you know, we can do a puzzle. That was also one thing that was mentioned. Like, we can still do, you know, cognitive things. We can still think, and we can still distract ourselves, and we can cope with stress. When we are over 30%, up until 70% stress, this is like more or less the middle ground, a big middle ground, where the skills, this is like what they call their main instruments in this therapy form. And oh, by the way, DBT stands for dialectic behavioral therapy, just FYI. The skills or the coping mechanisms that you can use to kind of regulate yourself down, and in order to get the stress level to go down again and to ground yourself. So it's essentially a very grounding technique based in grounding. They need to be combined. So what I mean by combined is cognitive, but also corporal in a way. So go for a stiff walk around the neighborhood, you know, when the air is cold, something like that. So you can still, you know, gather your thoughts. You can still do something, or you go for a walk and call a friend, something like that. That would be, you know, within the big, like medium realm of coping with stress until 70% of stress. You know, you can vent a little. That is also a great skill. You can do some arts and crafts. You can crochet, which is also, you know, involves your body, or, you know, what I love to do, stamp on my nails, do nail art, or coloring books. A lot of people love coloring books for that. But it is like the more the stress rises, the more two things are important, and that is mindfulness first, to kind of get you back into the here and now, because the more you kind of go into overdrive on this stress curve, the more you spiral upwards, the more people detach from their bodies. They tend to not feel their bodies so much. They tend also to lose a sense of space and time in a way, because you are so much in your thoughts. I think that everyone can relate to that in a way. So the skills that work best in the middle ground are skills that kind of get you back into the here and now in a way. So mindfulness based skills. And the more you move upwards that curve, the better it is to employ skills that have something to do with your body. So would it be, you know, to kind of pet down your body a little bit? I'm petting down my body right now so you can hear it in the podcast. Or shake it off, like literally shake it off. Those are skills that work great for those kind of things. But now we're talking about where, you know, the juice is, like 70% to 100%, which is called high stress. So when you are in the high stress realm, cognitive skills don't work anymore. Because you are, I can see from your reaction that you've been there. I'm sure that the dear listeners have been there too. You know, when you are just spiraling out of control, like a very everyday thing that I think that really everyone can relate to is, where are my fucking keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? Where are my keys? And I know that some people like really spiral out of control when they're looking for their keys. Like they hyperventilate even. Which is, you know, even aggravating the stress level. That's what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. So what they explained to me is that when you are within the high stress, cognitive skills don't work anymore. You need corporal skills. And this is why DBT has been developed for people with borderline personality disorder, because they tend to use skills that are very corporal, but that are self-harming. So the idea of DBT is that you still use corporal skills in order to regulate yourself from the stress level, like kind of bring the stress level down, but that don't hurt you much in the long run. You still need that punching corporal sensation that might hurt a little, but don't leave like permanent marks or that don't harm you. So they shared two skills with me that I'm willing to share in this podcast for free. Consider yourselves lucky. I normally charge for this. One of them is, and I have them just by chance next to me, extremely hot chili gums. You can buy these at different stores. I have no affiliation with the brand whatsoever. I haven't used them in a long, long while. This is why they taste very stale right now. But you can buy like extremely hot chili, habanero chilies or anything like that. Some people carry like natural chilies with them. But, you know, when you bite into something that is too hot for you, you have this sensation, right? You feel that rush. You feel that heat coming up. You maybe sweat a little bit, but it catapults you back into the here and now. It really drags your mind from the dark place that you're at, from the spiraling that you're at, and gets you back into the here and now. So chili is one skill. Another skill that is my personal favorite, mint oil. You know, that Chinese mint oil that is used against headaches, that kind of thing. Yeah, which is great against headaches. Please continue using it against headaches. But what they told me in-person treatment is you can put a few drops on the back of your hand and you can kind of kiss it. So you rub it against the inside of your lips and you really feel that mint burn. And that to me was, that was a revelation when they explained that to me, because like my mouth burned a lot, but like as soon as I felt that burn, I was here. I was there. I wasn't so much in my thoughts anymore. Mm. And so I love that you're bringing up DBT, because I think it's a great tool for everyone who copes with stress to develop skills that suits them personally. Right. And what they wanted me to do in in-person treatment, and what I ask of my clients too, who suffer from anxiety, who come to me for like different reasons, stress related stuff, is find the skills that are applicable in mm-hmm. your daily life that you feel comfortable with, and also that like small little stuff that you can carry around, like this little bottle of mint oil you can carry around in your pocket everywhere. You can have it at your disposal. It's cheap. It's not a big deal, and it helps you like in very, very stressful situations to calm down. Another example is I used the mint oil once in an oral exam. And yeah, I aced it. So it's not just for like very, very bad dissociative disorders or feelings, mood swings. Full disclosure, I have bipolar disorder. My shit's not in order, in order to quote one of my favorite singles as a singers, Mary Lambert. Yeah, so I'm very familiar with it. And I think that just everyone can benefit from it. Yeah, that was my big rant. I'm over.
I'm glad you went first. I'm just going to say, yeah, DBT helps you to manage your extreme emotions in like a very simplistic, like if you're just going to, you know, put it in a box, say it very simply, it's the idea is to help you manage very extreme emotions. So one of the things that I love is, so when I worked with my therapist, so I don't know about you, but often here they do DBT in like as group therapy.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I did it one-on-one because I guess I refused to do it in a group because I was really unwell at the time, and the idea of being in a group.
You were very wise. I wished I had the option.
So I did it one-on-one and found that really, really useful. Though group therapy is also really powerful, but that's what I needed at the time. I needed the one-on-one. And one of the things that I have taken away and that I talk to people about is creating, because self-soothing is essentially like it's a big part of that, to create your own self-soothing box. And again, it's figuring out what works for you. So like my self-soothing box, and actually at the moment I don't actually have a box. I've moved and I've not set a box up, but I need to do that again. But the things I have around me, so I have them around my desk as well, things like I have like aromatherapy roller blend because I find that really grounding, candles, a blanket, a hot water bottle. And again, like, so with the hot water bottle, the idea of the heat, as well as it being comforting, it's that idea of feeling something. But there can be anything in there, like colouring books for people. That's like a really mindful activity. And the idea with the self-soothing box is that when these things start to come up and you start to spiral, it's going to it and taking what you need, you know. And the idea of having it all together, whether that's in a box or in a space, is that it's very easily accessible. You don't have to do a lot of work to get to that point of having the support. And that was the biggest thing, actually, that I took from it, because having those things accessible at home while I'm at, like, my aromatherapy roller ball, I can take with me anywhere. And it doesn't fix me. It doesn't solve my problems. It doesn't, you know, get rid of PMDD. But it is something that I find quite grounding. You know, I can inhale the scent and really try and take a moment. And it's something that I've just found really, really useful.
Amen to that. There's one thing that has been going through my head while we both have been talking about it, and that is feedback from one of my clients and one of my... I've started to do a webinar this month. She was also in the webinar where I talked about CBT and skills. And she said, oh, you blew my mind when you said mindfulness, because I always associated meditation with mindfulness and I hate it. I hate meditation. I've been forced to meditate over and over again. This is not for me. Right. And by the way, yeah, if you have unresolved trauma, meditation is not the best choice for you. So when I talked about DBT and about skills and about, you know, the more you go up the stress level, the more incorporating corporal skills, she said, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. And I always thought that mindfulness wasn't for me, and that mindfulness was boring, and that mindfulness is like only meditation. And you opened up my horizon to this. You blew my mind. Thank you so much. So I want to share that also with the dear listeners, to let them know, no, mindfulness is not just meditation.
Yeah. And I think there's also, even around mindfulness, there's, I think people have a certain perception of it and that it needs to be like quite a big deal. But you can literally go on a walk, and mindfulness can be just taking note of your surroundings. So, you know, what can I hear? Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be this really huge thing. And I don't know if because it gets spoken about so much, it because there's the idea of it almost becomes like, I can't find my word, but it's like, so the reality of it is often much simpler than this idea that we're presented with.
I think I know what you want to say, or I think I presume what you want to say. Is it this same as with yoga? So this performative aspect of yoga that has been culturally appropriated by white people, insert anti-racism and anti-colonial critique here. I have to do this. I'm a cultural anthropologist. Otherwise, I would not honor my studies and my work and everything like that. But it's this performative aspect of self-care, you know, just like, oh, babble baths with bath bombs and yoga classes. And you have to drink the yoga tea before. You have to eat the sampa with it before. You have to say namaste in order to do yoga right. You have to have your Lululemon yoga pants. You have to do blah, 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 blah. No, you have, like, you don't need that. Like, with mindfulness, every day mindfulness, you can mindfully wash your fucking dishes.
Yeah.
Like, if you concentrate on how the water feels on your hand, the warmth of the water, the sponge cleaning the plates, how the plates feel in your hand, the squishiness of the soap. If you're like really in that moment and tune out all the other thoughts of, okay, so what's for dinner? Like, what if you tune out this, and if you are only in the here and now and notice mm-hmm. your surrounding, that is motherfucking mindfulness. You can poop mindfully for all I care.
Yeah, and I think interestingly, you know, like you said, that, you know, the idea of self-care, and don't get me wrong, like, for some people, you know, bubble baths and face masks might be part of their routine, and that's wonderful, it's amazing.
Yeah,
but self-care is, for me, I work from the ground up. Self-care is at its very fundamental level, like sleeping, eating, resting. So, like, the fun, you know, the things that we all need and sometimes are not able to get. You know, self-care doesn't need to be, like you say, like, I mean, it doesn't need to be signing up to a yoga class and doing the poses in the right way. I actually, the thing is, this is not me like having a go at yoga. I have one of my really close friends is Melissa. She does yoga for PMDD. Her approach to it, she's very aware that she is, you know, she's a privileged white woman in a lot of ways. She's very aware of that. But her whole approach to it is there's nothing performative about it. You know, she is all about supporting people with where they're at and saying that, you know what, yoga is just being. It's, again, the idea that yoga doesn't have to look a certain way. And so yoga can be self-care, but it can also be this thing that puts a lot of pressure on you and has a lot of societal stuff around it. I've kind of gone on a bit of a tangent then. But it's like anything.
I love those tangents. And I agree. That's exactly it. And that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Basically, own your self-care. Own your self-care, girl, with a U. Own your self-care, girl. Like, whatever it is you want to do. Mm. And everyone can be a girl with a U. Own your self-care, babe. Do whatever, like, really grounds you, makes you happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be aware of cultural appropriation, of course, but and critique it. But still, like, it is very possible to critique something and at the same time enjoy it.
Yeah, completely.
That is very, you know, that's very possible. And if Lululemon leggings make you happy while you do your yoga in order to combat your chronic back pain or PMDD, or, you know, in order to keep yourself from harming yourself,
yes, exactly.
More power to you. More power to you, honestly.
We are each so individual, so unique, and there is such power in listening to our inner voice, listening to our inner world, tapping into that and honouring where we're at. Something that I actually did at the end of last year was, so I released a workbook that was called Cultivating Self-Care. And the whole idea behind that is that it's such a unique thing that we need to cultivate a practice that works for us. And it allows you to work from the ground up to identify your self-care pillars. So what's important to you? What do you need in your life? How can you bring, you know, self-care into that arena? Because self-care is just looking after yourself, but it's something that is really important to me because there's so much conversation around it now. Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, there's loads of surface level stuff that will make you feel better and can be part of your self-care routine or practice or ritual, whatever you want to call it. But it's, I don't know, there's just so much power in tapping into what it is for you and how you can look after yourself. I love that.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I agree 100%. Because, you know, you can do so many courses, you can follow so many gurus, you can read so many books, you know, but it's just, I feel that most people out there, what they offer as their self-care approach, and I'm not bashing anyone in particular, it's really a general observation, is like, learn how to cope with XYZ because I've been through this and this is the way that I dealt with it and this is the way, like my way or the highway, more or less. It reads like this for me. And the beauty of, like, really, like you said, cultivating self-care, really, like that is, because I'm a cultural scientist, but yeah, is like really figuring out what actually really works for you. Because I can tell you like everything. I can list so many things, and nothing will stick unless you make it happen or you make it fit your daily life, your lifestyle, like your.
Exactly.
Because, you know, if I tell you, oh, go for a stiff walk in the morning and you are not a morning person, you will not do it. Go for a hike and you're afraid of heights, you will not gonna do it. Go for a mindful swim in the pool and you're afraid of water, you're not gonna do it. So who am I to tell you like what to do? Who am I to impose the ways of self-care on you? Like, no, this is not how it works, and this is not how you will, like, eventually efficiently, yes, I have to say it. I'm German. I get to say efficient. get rid of your high stress peaks in the long run.
And I think just that acknowledging that we are not experts in other people's lives.
Yes.
And so as coaches as well, there may be tools that we have, and I think it's really important to share them with the client, but to also say, you know what, this might work, this might support you, you can give it a go if it feels right, but we're all unique. So you're offering them that space, you're offering them, you know, tools that are brilliant, but may or may not work for them because, you know, all unique, all individuals, but it's then on them to make a decision as to how that fits in their life. Does it? And if it doesn't, fine, chuck it in the bin, no problem.
Exactly. And I'm not sure if I should share this or, well, what the hell. I used to be afraid of cognitive behavioral therapy, me myself, before I started coaching even, like, because a lot of people always thought, oh, you might want to try cognitive behavioral therapy for your issues, especially with bipolar disorder. CBT is one thing that is often prescribed, or that is often indicated, how we say in German. And I was just like, no, CBT, no, because I always associated homework with CBT and rigidity, and just like this, oh, well, the therapist is gonna give me some homework and I have to do it, and I have to kind of pile it on top of what you already are, of your to-dos in a day. So your to-do list gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then comes all the self-care that I have to do as well. And I, like, it took me a long while to figure out that that is just an invitation from the therapist. I think I really, really, really got it inside my head. Like, really, it stuck when I was in coaching training. So it's really, really recent. I really, really figured this out when I was in coaching training, when I looked at the other side, when I was the coach for change. Because it's really like that. You only are offering. You're only presenting it like a beautiful present. You're only like an hors d'oeuvre at the party. Yeah. You can take it or leave it. You can try it out. You can have a little nibble at it. And if it doesn't suit you, like, toss it in the bin. Totally there with you. But from the client perspective, or from the patient perspective, doesn't matter in this setting, it really feels like, oh no, I have to do this. I want to be good. I want to be the good student. I want to do this. I want to ace this. I want to get an A. I want to impress my therapist. I want to impress my coach. Mm-hmm. this is why I adopt one thing that is not set by me. It's not it's not within my, I didn't come up with it, but it's actually from Be Nourished. I'm not sure if you're aware with them. They're a Portland-based company, I think. Yeah, they're a company. It's two therapists. It's one nutritionist and one therapist who founded a revolutionary program that is called Body Trust. And that is like deeply rooted in radical self-care. So what they preach, or what they want, is to, it's like this coming home, and their concept that they trademarked is body trust. So like trust your body, and also trust your body to send you the signals and the impulses to tell you what your body needs at any given moment, and respond to them in a timely manner. And also, like, thank your body for all the amazing things that it does for you every single day. And, like, cultivate that relationship of seeing your body as your home, even though it might feel like a scary, scary place sometime, especially with PMDD, to kind of segue back into our main topic. You don't need to have PMDD in order to experience disconnection from your body, or even dysphoria. I myself, in my teens and throughout my whole 20s, suffered from an undiagnosed case of body dysmorphic disorder. So I viewed my body as not part of myself. And this is very painful too. And I wish that I had discovered Be Nourished, and not just Be Nourished, but any kind of, you know, radical belonging, any kind of body trust, any kind of feeling at home in your body, work or articles or any like that before. So to really elegantly segue back into PMDD, I'm sure that this topic of I hate my body, but this is my body and this is my home, and this is also part of me, even though I really dissociate from it, is a big part of that as well, I presume.
Yeah, it's funny because this week I was speaking on, I did an Instagram live with my friend Melissa, who I mentioned earlier, and we were talking around acceptance. So acceptance of PMDD, and there is this, you know, I think acceptance is a journey. You know, it's not a destination. It's a journey that I'm going to be going on for the rest of my life. Because I think when you've got a chronic illness, especially, or anything that's sort of very long term, it is something that you're going to keep coming up against and having feelings around. But yeah, it's that appreciation of my body and the things it does for me, because wow, my body's amazing. It does incredible things. But also then, you know, accepting that there are times of the month when I will, to put it bluntly, I'll hate myself. I'll hate my body. Like, I'll hate it all. And yeah, it's a long journey. But I've come so far in it. You know, I think I now live very cyclically. I think so. I've tracked my cycles for years anyway, but I now plan my life around my PMDD. So I know that in the first half of my cycle, after I've bled, like as I bleed, I begin to feel a bit better. So psychologically, I'll improve massively. And then because I have like quite heavy periods, I'll still have quite low energy and stuff. But so as I go through that, you know, period of time, my energy will increase. So I'll have a few weeks where my energy, you know, have a burst of energy more or less, and I'll be more able to do certain things. And then I'll have 2 weeks where I have to sort of very slowly just like, I'm using hand gestures here for a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Like slowly decrease like a stare. Thank you. Yeah. I wasn't aware of it either. I was just feeling the moment.
Yeah, I realized. But yeah, so I slowly I won't book as much, so as many appointments in that week before, and then that week of, like I said earlier, I won't have any sort of face-to-face client interaction, but I still support my clients via WhatsApp or email, depending on what they need. But that's been really empowering for me. And I think if I hadn't have accepted that I have PMDD, that I have a chronic illness, that this is just, it's a part of my life, then I wouldn't be able to live that way. Yeah. So it doesn't take away it doesn't take PMDD away, but it allows me to live, I guess, more in harmony with it as much as you can. And I've realized earlier, we were talking about treatment options, and that's how we got to DBT. Mm-hmm. So it might be nice to just go through the other bits, you know, treatment options that people have, just to kind of round that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So once you've kind of done, you know, antidepressants, contraceptives, therapy, lifestyle changes. So, you know, it's very different for every individual. Some people take lots of supplements and stuff. It's very, very individual. And that's not something that I like to comment on. I don't have a particular way that I think people should manage their lifestyle around PMDD, because I think it can be quite triggering as well. But then if none of that has worked, then you get to the point where there might be the option to go into the chemical menopause. So you take, like, it's called a GnRH analog, and it essentially just stops everything from working. It shuts off your hormones. It puts you into the chemical menopause.
Wow. Oh yeah, I think I heard of it once. It's pretty severe too. It has pretty severe, because I mean, it is pretty high dose of hormones, right? It has pretty severe side effects when you take it.
Yeah, it's strange because I've now come off them, but I chose that treatment option because nothing was working to the level that I needed it to. And I mean, it's really difficult. So it's just so not the right word. I can't live my life with PMDD as it is, like. That treatment made a huge difference to my quality of life. It was difficult because I then had symptoms of the menopause, and I had to go in HRT, and it was, you know, trying to manage that.
Sorry, HRT, what does it stand for?
Oh, sorry.
Again, please.
Hormone replacement treatment. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So because essentially my body wasn't producing any estrogen, I needed to have like add back hormones to bring that level up and to just get rid of some of the symptoms, and that can be a bit tricky trying to find the right balance of things. So that made a huge impact. But the thing is, and I've only spoken about this sort of outside of my inner circle once before, is that I would like to have a child, and my husband and I had lots of discussions and decided, okay, we're going to try for a child. So I had to come off the treatment, and this year has been, or last year, coming off it was like the worst 3 months of my life. Those 3 months, I've never been so unwell. I was really, really unwell. We, you know, had to get a lot of extra support. We had to move in with my in-laws, so that my husband could have the support, because I needed so much support. And then things evened out. I got my hormones back, as in things, you know, my periods came back and things became predictable again, so I could manage my cycle. Yeah. And as it stands, yeah, we are trying for a baby. But the thing is, you know, we don't know how long we could try for, because we don't know how long this is doable for me. And I'm the one who has to make that decision. And there's a this is something I think I do want to start speaking about more, because I think it's important, but it's difficult. But it's this, you're essentially making a choice between your health and, you know, being able to have a child. And for some people, you know, having a child isn't important to them, and that's like, that's amazing. We're each, again, so individual. I have always wanted a child.
And I never.
It's just one of those things, isn't it? Like, some people are indifferent. There's just such a like scale, but I've always known that it's been really, you know, it's important to me. So we decided that we're trying, and if it gets too much, then, and if we don't get pregnant, we've kind of got a time scale that we've agreed on, then we will look at adopting in the future, and I will probably end up having a hysterectomy. That is what things look like at the moment. That looks like my pathway. But we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how it's going to turn out. And the important thing to say is, like, my story, my relationship with PMDD is not everyone's relationship with PMDD. Some people take the pill and it changes their life. So that, for some people, it can be. So if there's anyone who is listening and they're thinking, she's been through it because it took a long time to get to where I got to and where I am, there are options. It may be that someone could go to the doctor, and there may be I'm going to say, for want of a better word, like a quick fix. There may be a quicker fix than my experience.
Yes.
But it's, you know, PMDD is such a huge topic.
Yeah. I think everyone should realize that now. Who listens to that point should realize that now. And I wanna take the time and, like, really, really thank you for coming on today, and for talking about this, and for being so open and vulnerable about your own life and your own experiences with this, and talking about this. And even though I never considered having children of my own, and it has never, ever been a topic for me, like, every like, even when I was a young girl, like a toddler, when toddlers pretend that they're like mommies, and when they play mommy, I never did that. So this for me was like really like having a child, like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. And this is how I feel it. But that doesn't mean that I do not respect someone else's wish to have children of their own, and that I do kind of, you know, empathetically feel the struggle, even though for me personally this was never came up in a way. And this is just like what I also want to put out here, like, we both are on completely opposite spectrums of the kids question, right? But we still respect one another, we still talk about it, and you don't condemn my lifestyle choices, and I don't condemn yours. And this is how connection and exchange and mutual respect works, people. So thank you so much for this. Like, my heart is melting, and I'm also feeling warm and fuzzy inside, because all of this talk and talking about, like, self-care and the importance of it and everything. And so this is all that I wanted to throw out there and mirror you back, like we said in coaching.
Oh, thank you so much, Dot. And I really appreciate, you know, having the space to talk. And I think that point that you made about, you know, having that sort of mutual respect and respecting our, you know, different choices in life, the things that we want, just because someone's different and they want different things, that doesn't make them any less in any way. And I think it's so important to have conversations where, you know, in which people don't have differing opinions, because you can then kind of see, oh, that connection still exists. You know, it's not, you know what I'm saying. So thank you.
I know exactly what you're saying. Oh. Well, Gina, to round things up, because I'm conscious of time, which is also a very coaching phrase. I'm just conscious of time. I love that saying, by the way, that English saying. I never get to say that out loud because I'm German, and there has been some little soft little cultural clashes and differences and cultural adaptations throughout my training with Animas and throughout my meeting you, of course, too, and then throughout the whole thing. So it's just, I will always remember, yeah, I'm conscious of time. And I think this is just so elegant. It's so British. I feel like dipping my scones into my tea, darling. this is how I feel when I hear this every time.
I love it.
Yeah, right. So I'm conscious of time, my dear. If people want to check out more about and want to know more about you, if people think, oh yeah, what Gina has described, I think I might have PMDD as well, and they want some more information, or they even want to work with you, and if people are really interesting, interested in your self-care, cultivating self-care workbook, where can they find all this? Where are you at?
So if people just want to connect with me, then I'm on Instagram at Gina Field Coaching. And there's also my website, which is GinaFieldCoaching.co.uk, and on there, if you're interested in the workbook, you can buy that in the shop. If you're interested in working with me, then you can book a discovery call so we can have a free 30-minute chat to talk things through. That's my website is probably the place to be. And I just want to say that though I work with people with PMDD, I also work with all self-identifying women. And the things that are really important to me in my work is to help people to like connect to their truest self and just really to like reclaim confidence. That's something that I've seen a lot in the work that I do, like, you know, reconnecting to that confidence almost. Those things that are, you know, those are things that I'm really passionate about. So head over to my website, head over to my Instagram, and I would love to connect. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gina. And this has been a delight. And talk to you soon, I hope.
Bye. Bye.
Like what you heard so far? Well, if you want to support me, there's two ways to do it. The first one doesn't cost you anything, and that is giving me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and now it's called Apple Podcasts. It used to be called iTunes, now it's Apple Podcasts. And to do that, you need to first and foremost get an Apple ID. And everyone can get one. It's not only reserved to Apple users. Android users can get one. PC users can get one. I even got one in order to post the podcast there. So that's not a big deal. And you look for Larger Living Podcast up top left, I think it is, for the PC version. You then find the podcast, leave your rating and your review. And why so many podcasters stress this is pretty easy. This podcast is listed in the health category, so it is automatically competing with other podcasts that feature not so health at every size topics, to say the least. So fat diets, I think the number one podcast in Germany at the moment is a keto podcast, and the second one is intuitive weight loss. And we all know that intuitive weight loss not only doesn't work, but also causes harm. So by pushing this podcast and other anti-diet podcasts, you make sure to spread the anti-diet message, and you make sure that this podcast shows up earlier in the search results for the health category, so that other people learn about intuitive eating and health at every size. And if you happen to have a little bit of money on your hand and you want to support me financially, which I greatly appreciate, there are also two ways to do that. So the first one is to become a patron of the show. You join patreon.com/largerliving, and I got three tiers set up for you. You can either decide to buy me a coffee monthly, a burger with fries, or a whole brunch, and you get different benefits from it. Every patron gets podcast episodes without ads. And if a monthly contribution is not your thing, you can still support me as a one-off by donating to my money pool on PayPal. And you use paypal.me/largerliving. You can donate as much as you want. One-off won't judge you for it. And thank you so, so much for spreading the word. I am getting more and more messages of, hey, a good friend of mine recommended this podcast to me. I love it. Or a good friend of mine said that you have a different approach to food and dieting and exercise, and I'm willing to give it a try, or stuff like that. So it is your word of mouth that keeps me afloat, that keeps me alive, that keeps this podcast, you know, going and my work still going. And I really just wanted to make sure to thank you all for this. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. And I also want you to take good care of yourselves, because you deserve it.
You may have noticed I am large. I can't hide it. It's no secret. It's a fact. I'm technically obese. I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. The word fat can sometimes cause a bit of shock. Some people are offended, but I'm not. I've owned it and reclaimed it, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm fat, and frankly, I rock. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large, and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just wanna sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion round the world, so we're at war against the way that people look. Some people wanna clutch their pearls and worry about us. They should be dieting! Dear God, what about their health? But there's no correlation between health and my appearance, so you can keep your damned opinions to yourself. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large, and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's why my fat body rocks.